comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on earth, and it is the show where you matter. On this coming Saturday, we're going to be doing something we do on the first Saturday of every month. On the first Saturday of every month, I go into the chat room at showtime. So whatever time it is right now in your time zone, that's the time, okay, on Saturday. I'll be in the chat room, and I spend a couple of hours in there, and we always have a good time. I chat with everybody that shows up, and I hope you do. I'll be there, and a lot of other folks will be there, and we'll have a good time. So mark it on your calendar. It's time for my monthly chat appearance. Our free weekly newsletter is called the K-Files. Now, the K-Files, you expect me to say that it's an excellent publication. So I will. It's an excellent publication. But it really is. And I invite you, if you're not already subscribed, to go over to my website and subscribe because, it's an excellent publication and it's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There are no strings attached. And we always have a lot of interesting articles in there, links to interesting videos. There's audience feedback and the inside scoop on what's happening here at the show. Also, there's always a link to a free download. All right. So, and it's not one of those trialware things. It's something that is freeware, but is useful and valuable, and lots of people can use it. And so, I put a link to some new freeware in each edition of the K-Files. So if you're not subscribed, be sure you do that. Now, we don't give away our email list. We don't sell it. We don't loan it out. We don't lease it out. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed. So be sure you get over there and subscribe, and then you'll be in the know. You won't be out in the dark anymore. Well, as you know, this week there was a press conference in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club that has pretty much shaken the ground around the world. It pretty much has shaken the ground right up under the chairs of skeptobunkers as well. And it has been taken seriously by mainstream media. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. That's a plus. And tonight, someone who has been involved with that, Robert Morningstar, is going to join us. And he says that the back of the truth embargo on UFOs has been broken by this press conference. So I want us to examine that a little bit. I want to find out why he thinks the back of the truth embargo has been broken. We'll be back with Robert Morningstar right after this.
Thank you.
have for a very long time, those of us who are interested in UFOs, and we are, I'm not a believer. I am a UFO enthusiast, and I like to research. I like to interview people who have done research, etc. But we who are in this so-called UFO community, for a long time, we have been saying that, you know, the press needs to get the giggles out of their reports and just do straight reporting. Well, this week, something happened that shook the ground. It shook the ground in the UFO community. It shook the ground under the most ironclad, committed skeptobunkers. And I'm persuaded it shook the ground under a few folks in various governments around the world. It was the press conference sponsored by Robert Hastings and Bob Salas that was held at the National Press Club, in which they presented witnesses to the press who were people who have been in charge of nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons facilities, and these witnesses told about UFO interference and presence at those facilities. One of the people involved in helping to get all this set up is Robert Morningstar, and Robert is with us tonight. Always a pleasure to have the editor of UFO Digest with us, Robert Morningstar. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
Robert, you were involved with this press conference at some point and at some level. Tell us what your involvement was.
Well, my involvement is my support for Robert Hastings and his project. I've been working closely with Robert for about 2.5 or 3 years when I saw his articles coming out in Frank Warren's UFO Chronicles, and they struck me as being some of the most important case histories that I had ever read, and his information was so important, pertinent, and well-sourced. You might say the horse's mouth, as we used to say in the old days. The witnesses were speaking to him and beginning confidentially. Robert Salas was the first one to come out openly, and little by little, a network grew around these first revelations of the intrusion of UFOs into nuclear facilities. And Bob Hastings, Bob Salas, and almost everybody, it seems like everybody's named Robert in this group. It's one of those high strangeness aspects of this UFO event. But I recognized the importance of Robert Hastings' work a few years ago. And in 2009, he published UFOs and Nukes. That may have been the end of 2008, beginning of 2009. But we awarded him the UFO Writer of the Year award in recognition of this tremendous book. It's over 500 pages of chronicles and accounts and witness testimonies to the repeated intrusions of UFOs at nuclear bases, weapons depots, SAC B-52 bases, nuclear research facilities, Oak Ridge, Sandia, and all around the world, really. So we have, I have worked, as one of his supporters, and I'm one of his biggest fans. And when this conference was organized, I started alerting people to it's happening, and I contacted major media people, editors, CNN and Fox News, and kept pushing to have them cover it, and it was very gratifying to see the success of this. It's actually shocking. I think we're living through one of the greatest weeks in the history of UFOs, peaking and culminating with the press conference. But in the days before it, there was such a concatenation of synchronistic events that seemed to me to be literally synchronistic, and that somebody's synchronizing them in this case. It's not by chance. But the UN appointed an official spokesperson as a space ambassador. If aliens should ever manifest, there'd be an official greeter.
Mm-hmm.
And comments were coming out of the Catholic Church and the Vatican regarding extraterrestrials and their place in the cosmic and spiritual hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and even discussions of whether aliens could be baptized. And, you know, that is not insignificant, you know, because the Catholic Church is a very, very powerful and widespread organization, and its beliefs and dogmas and doctrines really inspire a lot of people. And I think the Catholic Church has been preparing itself for this eventuality, disclosure, if you want to call it, or some open manifestation approach by UFOs. So the conference in Washington was especially significant, because when conferences like these occur, very often the media ignores them or sweeps them under the rug or gives them a cursory look with a little laugh and a little green man comment. But this was rather significantly different. For one, I am very grateful to CNN personally for carrying the live feed of the conference.
Yeah, they streamed it live, didn't they?
They streamed it live, and I was lucky enough mm-hmm. to see it. I was supposed to go to Washington and be there, and I wanted to meet Robert Hastings. We've only conversed briefly on the phone once or twice, or exchanged emails a lot. But I wanted to meet him, and unfortunately, as I said on another show, New York is a hard city to get out of, and Washington is a hard city to get into. And then these thunderstorms came in, you know, appropriately for the shock and awe that was going to happen on Monday. Well, these thunderstorms rolled in and kept me from doing it. So I was pretty bummed out. I was very disappointed not to be there in person. And then I wake up, and our friend Giuliano Marinkovic and Dave Haith in the UK heard and found the links to the CNN live stream and sent it to me, and we bounced it all over the planet that morning and afternoon. And so I was able to be there virtually, you know, whereas mm-hmm. in virtual attendance at this NPC conference. And I'll tell you, I was very impressed. I am impressed by their courage. I'm impressed by their professionalism. The very direct and candid way that they presented their information, this succinct, concise, explicit manner in which they presented it, each of them, almost in very professional military fashion.
But right, now, when I was talking with you on the telephone about this press conference, you made a comment that I put in quotation marks and used on the graphic that we have
right.
on the website, and that is
yeah.
that the back of this truth embargo about UFOs has been broken. Do you really think that's the case?
Oh, yes, I think so, because you know what? The most significant one is CBS covered it.
Why is that the most significant one?
That's the most, for me, that's the most significant one, because CBS has been connected with, you know, adherence to the official government policy. In the Kennedy assassination field, we used to joke that CBS was like CIA television news, you know, that they're that type. And they always towed the party line, and they broke with that. They reported it, as I said, very professionally, without any kind of giggle factor behind it. They posted links to Bob Hastings' new report, NICAP report,
mm-hmm.
with the testimonies of all the witnesses that appeared. And the Air Force Times covered it. And I think, you know, in reading the Air Force Times report, I could feel a certain amount of happiness, glee, pride, a restoration of honor and respect for the service,
mm-hmm.
because no Air Force serviceman or officer likes the the double take that they've been doing on UFOs and looking silly in the public eye, coming up with parachute dummy explanations for Roswell in 1947 when the parachute dummy mogul drops were done many years later. You know, that doesn't sit right with U.S. Air Force servicemen. And I think that all of us who respect the United States Air Force and the service servicemen are very gratified that this has occurred. But the most important thing, I mean, most significant thing for me, besides the amazing information that they related, was the change that I saw in the audience of journalists that were in that room at the National Press Club, who after, in the question and answer period, more often than not, had comments and personal testimonies that they gave. So they were, some of them were coming up and relating their own UFO experiences, confessing their fear to publish them for fear of ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
And one in particular, who works for a major news service, fessed up that not only had he seen UFOs several times, but that he had had two extraterrestrial contacts. And it was remarkable to see the man change his demeanor and his posture and walk away and from the microphone. And to me, as a person who knows body language and kinesiology, there was such a tremendous sense of relief apparent in the man, in the reporter, after he fessed up publicly that he had seen UFOs and that he had had two alien contacts.
Don't you find it interesting that...
Then he approached. He seemed quite a bit nervous and weighted down by the as he approached the mic and then related those stories.
Don't you find it a little bit interesting that these people were afraid of ridicule, so they didn't report it? They were afraid of being ridiculed because they, the news media, created the ridicule machine themselves.
Well, you know, they applied it, but in reality, the ridicule machine was developed by the Central Intelligence Agency as a directive on one of the many ways to discredit a witness and to debunk UFO reports. Now, that goes back to that period immediately after the Robertson Commission report, 1952, after the UFOs buzzed Washington on successive nights and hovered over the White House and the Capitol and were chased around by jets that couldn't chase them until they wanted to be caught, and then all of a sudden surrounded one of our flight's interceptors and gave him the willies, you know?
So, well, yeah, okay.
The ridicule policy was recommended by the CIA as a way of getting rid of the credibility of witnesses.
Yeah, I understand that the CIA came up with that idea, but had the major media not bent over and grabbed their ankles, had they had some kind of moral stamina and moral core and done what free media and free press is supposed to do, which is go for the truth and report it, then they wouldn't find themselves in this situation.
Yeah. But as I point out, you know, it is really not a free media because the government holds the sword of Damocles over their heads with the licensing. And anyone who did not toe the party line, you know, as far as, maintaining secrecy on UFOs, every year they have to renew their licenses. And that's what, this is the big boogeyman that scared all the news agencies, television, news, radio stations, in particular, not so much the press, the printed press, but that's a very heavy thing to bear. You know, that you might lose your license if you don't conform to a dictate government policy.
Oh, I like that word, a dictate. That's something a dictator does.
Excuse me?
I like that word, dictate. That's something a dictator does.
Mm-hmm.
And, if indeed the back of the UFO truth embargo has been broken, I am pleased. I am truly pleased. It, but now, you know, it brings up some huge questions for instance, I accept everything you said about the press and the sword of Damocles hanging over them, placed there by the government, having to do with their licenses to broadcast. I'll accept that. It's a reality. Okay, what changed?
What changed?
Yeah.
I think what changed is that you cannot hide the obvious forever. And I think that the arrival of mass media in the hands of the public, and by that I mean people having cell phone cameras, video camcorders, digital transmission, and so on and so forth, and instantaneous access to the internet to disseminate the information in seconds, and actually milliseconds at times, that the impossibility of snuffing that information flow is impossible. It was possible in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 90s, when the mass media was controlled from a central directive. But once the mass of humanity got on the internet, and we are armed with cell phone cameras, as I said, and video recorders, and USB connectors to computers, boom, it's instantly there. That's why we know what happened in China with the Xi'an airport closure.
Yeah, we've had that situation now for several months, actually for several years now. We've had this situation with internet and cameras everywhere and access to information. And the news media has still been playing ball with the cover-up. They've still been perpetuating the cover. So something changed. If they were afraid, if they were afraid last week to lose their license, but this week they reported it all straight, what happened?
It was begun by the Stephenville sighting and the concatenation of UFO-related events that followed it, including the UN, purported UN UFO disclosure movement, with which both of us have been involved. And it's been going for 2 years, and it's been going in government circles in Europe, releasing their UFO files.
We have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Works better when you turn the mic on. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Robert Morningstar. Robert, when we went away for break, I was pressing the point of what happened. Now, let me get more specific. When Roswell happened, we know from the testimony of the station owner, the radio station owner, that he was told if he broadcast any more about this flying disc, he would lose his FCC license.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this kind of strong-arm violation of the Constitution has been the practice in the dark side of the UFO phenomena here in the United States since then, maybe before then, but we know that since then, since 1947, this kind of strong-arm violation of the Constitution and suppression of media and manipulation of the media has been daily fare when it comes to UFOs. Now, we come to September 2010, and Robert Hastings and Robert Salas and some other people gathered with them, do a press conference all up until this point, that sword of Damocles has been over the press, but this time, CNN does it with no giggles. They stream the whole conference. They present it in their news. They have Robert Hastings on a morning show to interview him, and did it without giggles and did it seriously. CBS reported it without giggles. Fox reported it without giggles. What changed? If they were afraid to lose their licenses, and therefore we must ridicule and giggle, 2 weeks ago, there had to be something in the government that changed. There had to be something in the shadows that said, okay, let it go.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're in the middle of a revolution. It's a philosophical and scientific revolution. And as a result, it will be a social revolution. But it is engineered. It's being engineered in stages. And so I think that we can see it, as I said, starting with the 2007 Chicago O'Hare incident, then the 2008 Leslie Keen, James Fox, NBC UFO conference down there with all the noteworthy generals, pilots, government officials, the events of Stephenville, the changes in the coverage of by Larry King of witness testimonies. But you know what? They were not still free of it, because if you recall, Angela Joyner lost her job with that local newspaper down in Texas when she became too popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 weeks after she broke the stories and became the foreman or the forefront spokesperson for the whole Stephenville incident, she was fired or lost her job because they told her she couldn't write about UFOs anymore. So that was still one of the perils for people in the printed media.
Mm-hmm.
But slowly the effect, and I think it's really this, is the effect, psychological effect of the UN UFO initiative, the cohesion and coalescence of UFO activism in Europe and in the United States, pushing on their governments to release files, to own up. They just got tired of it. As I said to some friends, you know, the cost of propping up a lie grows greater and greater the bigger the lie, because the truth stands on its own. It needs no support, it needs no props, but a lie and disinformation needs continued reinforcement, and that reinforcement is another series of lies, and it takes a lot of money, time, resources to keep generating the force of disinformation, and at a certain point it's got to collapse because it cannot sustain itself. And that's
I agree with that, but you know, my
of operating or ruling by disinformation is a good example. It just
I agree with it, Robert, but what I'm getting at is this: there had to have been a shifting of the gears in some official places in the government for that sword of Damocles to disappear.
Yeah. What that particular one is, I can't say exactly what it is, except the sum total of the effects of all of these, the positive reactions of citizens to UFOs. The, dare I say it, the commercial success of UFOs. When I started pitching to Fox News and CNN and radio stations and newspapers to cover UFOs seriously, one of the things I pointed out is, hey man, UFOs are, you know, of public interest, and there's a lot of money to be generated by supplying the public with the information it's interested in. So I pushed the mercenary aspect on them as a motivator. And it seems to have worked to some degree. You know, you see a lot of UFOs in commercials and aliens and things like that. So that's how it starts. That's part of the acclimatization process for getting the people's heads ready to receive the download. That's, you know how you have to format a disc before you put the information down on it? Well, our national consciousness is being formatted as we speak by these events. In preparing and laying down the groundwork, the information to be able to receive the download of whatever it is that is going to manifest. And we've talked before about the ultimatum that was given to the United States and the major powers by a race of extraterrestrials who told them that they either have to own up to the people on their own that there is an alien presence on this earth, or that they were going to take it in their own hands and begin manifestations. And I think that we've seen that. We've seen this with events in China. We've seen this with events in Russia. Not only the Norway spiral, but that pyramidal UFO that was videotaped hovering over Moscow day and night. There's videos of the thing tumbling around in daytime, and there are videos of it tumbling around in nighttime in Moscow too.
Let me be the devil's advocate here, and let's play what if. One of the things that we've been hearing out of the cover-up artists for years is, well, UFOs, if they exist, do not pose a national security threat to the United States of America. We're not hearing that now. That has disappeared. We're not hearing that they're not a national security threat. Nobody yet is saying that they are a threat.
You know, can I?
But that has disappeared.
There's a little detail that needs to be corrected in what you said.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they do not present a threat to the national security of the United States government. And that's very different.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as UFOs are not interfering with the government process or shifting the balance of power, the U.S. government was okay with that.
But they're not even saying that anymore.
Has happened, as you astutely point out. What that is exactly, we will have to wait. But it seems like a very strange series of events, including this major mini-series or series on NBC, the event about a president who has to reveal the presence of extraterrestrials and unfold the disclosure for the American people. I think that this is something, this is the way the government works with its psychological strategy board. Prepare people psychologically, 6 months to a year.
But are they preparing us?
Dune was done in 2000.
Are they? Hang on a second. Hang on. Are they preparing us for the truth? Or are they preparing us for the much rumored false flag that we have an alien threat and we've all got to give up our liberties and trust the government so they can protect us from these mean aliens? We don't know which way this water's going to squirt here.
That's right. That's right. Or we could be presented with two groups of aliens, you know. One is the manufactured alien threat, and then perhaps it will be, that's the contingency to debunk a benevolent alien presence revealed itself. And just the revelation would pose a threat to the power. They could have a contingency plan to have some bad aliens do some bad things to turn everybody against extraterrestrials.
So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, we'll see what happens. That's all we can do is wait. But again, we have to be clear ourselves on how we ourselves are going to handle this this change in the paradigm.
Has the paradigm changed? Has it shifted?
I think it has, and it's shifting as each individual grows accustomed to the idea. It's a gradual metamorphosis of the national psychology to be more receptive and fearless. And fearlessness is a really big part of this, because that's the thing that put that policy, the denial policy, in effect. No need to rehash the War of the Worlds, but they took that as the model for what it would happen, or how humans, Americans in particular, that would react to the prospect of an encounter with an extraterrestrial race. But again, War of the Worlds was presented in a hostile manner. I mean, if War of the Worlds was called something else, and it was about benevolent aliens landing in New Jersey instead of wiping out Princeton and healing people, it would have been a totally different reaction on the people in New York area, New York, New Jersey, when Orson Welles did that show. So if it's presented with a hostile aspect, of course, we're going to be defensive about it. But I think that we all have to study our own, we have to study our own fears and get over them.
Yeah. All right, now, after this press conference, it was to be expected that as the ground was quaking under the professional skeptobunkers, that they would respond. Have they?
Yes, CSI, the Committee for Skeptical Investigators, has already started taking pot shots at some of the witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of typical, again, ridicule, creating doubt, challenging people's perceptions.
Are those guys on the payroll? I'm quite serious about this. Are they on the payroll of the CIA?
Well, they're on the payroll of some government-affiliated agency. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's the CIA. You know, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago or so, when we started doing shows together, you asked me, who you think's in charge? And I said to you, I think that the Atomic Energy Commission is in charge in the 40s, and that became the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yeah.
I still believe that, and just coincidentally, the three main skeptibunkers in CSI have worked for the nuclear industry, the government nuclear industry, both in the military and in the civilian and research aspects of it.
Do you know if this CSI is receiving any funds? Well, we have a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Folks, don't go away. More tough questions. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about this press conference that took place at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. this week. A press conference about UFOs, in some cases interfering with nuclear facilities, and in some cases just hovering around and being around nuclear facilities. And when we went away for break, we were talking about this, you had mentioned, CSI, and I believe that stands for the Committee for Skeptical Investigation?
Investigators.
Yeah, okay. And my question is, do you know, and I'm just asking, I'm not accusing, I'm just asking a question. Do you know if that organization receives any funding whatsoever from any federal agency?
No, I don't know that for a fact, but I am sure that it's a tax-exempt organization that has to file all of its finances and give lists of donors. So if anyone's interested in that, I would pursue that avenue of investigation.
Now, I want to clarify why I asked the question. I am not asking that because they upset me because they ask questions of us. That's not why. I'm only asking because I'm trying to sort out if there is some manipulation going on, manipulating public perception, it would be useful for us to know if on one side of the equation the government gave the go-ahead for the press to treat this as real news, and then on the other side bring in the skeptibunkers for discredit and for manipulation in that way. I'm just trying to figure out what
That's
the equation is.
You've given me an insight, and right on the mark. And here's the situation. We're talking about the government, quote-unquote, the government, you know? But if we really look at that they engineered in 1972 during the Nixon administration, that's when the government turned over official handling of UFOs to shadow organizations of the military-industrial complex. That is to say, they turned it over to industrial security agencies, and it became a non-governmental purview or sphere of interest. And now, the government, if I'm interpreting current events and working with the insight you've just given me, government is trying to take back the authority from this shadow, which in the Torbit documents is called the Defense Intelligence Security Command, and the acronym is DISC. So some people have thought, believe that it was a made-up title, but as time has gone by, it seems that there's a bridge with ex-government police types, mm-hmm. security types, who go to work for the industrial types, and these are the big aerospace manufacturers. We all know their names. I don't have to name them. As I said, we don't want to give them any free advertising. But it seems to me that after Nixon turned it over, he just washed his hands, you know, of UFOs and let somebody else worry about it, let the Defense Intelligence Security Command handle that. And they took off with it, and it seems like they have been become a government, shadow government in their own way. And it seems to me perhaps that the government that we're talking about wants to take back authority over it, and perhaps loosening the reins and loosening the chokehold on the information is a way of doing that. Very, very interesting.
Well, one thing is for sure, and that is if you turn the lights on, the cockroaches will run.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's true. But he also, just to get back to the skeptic bunker mentality, you asked me, you know, who?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of these people in the CSI group, as far as being ex-military, they are also former Air Force security officers, and the others worked at national laboratories that dealt with nuclear weapons development and technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that there is a good old boy club underlying all these things, and that they are ushered out of official work in, let's say, the military or in defense industry, and then they're ushered into these roles as disinformationists. I refer to them as disinformation officers, because they still maintain a very strict adherence to a military policy, even though they're wearing civilian clothes. And a typical one, I'll mention one name everybody knows, is James Oberg.
Well, you know, the position they're in now is very similar to the position of the
nuclear weapons development and things like that.
The position they are in now is very similar to the position of the tobacco industry apologists, those who spoke in favor of tobacco and it's not harmful and mm-hmm. it's good for you and all of all those people that were saying that. Well, they're down the tubes now. Mm-hmm. And these skeptibunkers are in that same position that those tobacco industry apologists were in, because they're going to be down the tubes real soon.
Yeah, you know, as I said, one of their standard ploys is to attack a person's perceptions or the accuracy of their memories, and it's an old ploy. And I was very surprised, you know, that, for example, was a fellow named McGahey, and he comes out and he starts arguing that pilots don't have any better vision than anybody else, and they don't have any better judgment than anybody else, and they can make the same mistakes as anybody else. And, you know, that, I think that that argument is ludicrous, because I know as a pilot that there are very strict FAA guidelines on who's allowed to get behind the wheel of an airplane.
That's correct.
And this involves physical fitness exams that go from every 3 months to 6 months to every year to every 2 years, depending on your grade of the grade of license. An airline transport pilot has to go through very rigorous testing every 6 months to know that everything is working fine, that his eyesight, his hearing, his coordination, that all of it is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Not just good. It has to be excellent. And for them to come out and start attacking pilots' credibility based on the faultiness of their perceptions, it would really be it's an insult, really, to pilots, and I always take umbrage at it.
Well, it's an insult, but it's also verifiably ludicrous.
For the reasons that I said.
Yes.
That, these men, including myself, when I was a more active pilot, we have to take these eye tests that involve discernment of colors, discernment of shapes, besides reading a printed, numbers and letter card at a distance. You have to read very small type in very dim light. You have to turn your back on the FAA physician examiner, and he whispers some words in a certain low tone, and if you can't hear them with your back turned, you know your hearing is defective. So again, I do believe that pilots and professionals do have superior faculties of perception, and they should not be denigrated.
These guys in this organization, this CSI organization, they work for private industry somewhere, don't they?
I think these fellows have other jobs, but they are also writers and lecturers who are assigned to go after certain topics or certain groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking heads, for example, that will appear on history channels, and
it might be instructive for us to just to see who do they work for, what's their source of personal funding, because there may be some linkage there to why they want to defend the absolutely ridiculous positions that they put forward.
Well, you know, there is a lot of satisfaction in being an investigator, as you surely know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you investigate something and you're unraveling a mystery, there's I personally have a lot of satisfaction, mental exhilaration, euphoria.
We have to step away for a break for just a moment. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert Morningstar, and we have been talking about this press conference that was held this week at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, my sincere sympathy to you for having missed such fabulous information in the first hour, but we are delighted you're here now. In a few minutes, I will open the telephone lines so that you can call in with your question or comment about this press conference. If you have a question or comment for Robert Morningstar, you'll be able to call in and speak to him directly. We have a couple of things yet to explore relative to this press conference. Robert, why do you think the Disclosure Project was at the National Press Club? Got covered and giggled at.
Right.
There have been a few other press conferences held at the National Press Club, mm-hmm. and barely got covered. Mm-hmm. Now, this time, I'm assuming that somehow the word was passed along to the media that it's okay, go ahead and cover it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm assuming they got that message. But why do you think? I would have expected CNN to do what they did with the sword of Damocles removed.
Mm-hmm.
But why CBS? Why Fox? Why the other news agencies? Why were they suddenly converted, baptized, and had become deacons in the Church of UFOs when it comes to just reporting this straight?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it's the seriousness of the subject matter. You know, it's one thing to cover UFO Phoenix lights and like lights in the sky, or people who say they have been abducted and taken for a ride or receiving cosmic intelligence. But it's quite another thing to have professional military officers of the United States Air Force coming forth after 50 and 40 and 30 years and coming forth with this subject, which is they have control of our nuclear weapons and we don't. Basically, that's what it all boils down to. You know, when you mm-hmm. look at the testimony, they just showed you who's the master technician. You know, the guy with the screwdriver working on the computer board, or the guy in the driver's seat above it flashing the laser down into the silo and changing the targeting on the missile. You know,
mm-hmm.
who's the real boss? And they're saying, you know, don't get involved in nuclear war. Because if you think you're going to launch this missile and it hit point A or point B, if you're point A, it might well come down on your head or go some other place totally unexpected. And that's the question that I have, because I have heard that some of the tampering involved not disabling missiles, but changing their targeting. And another one, which isn't spoken of too often, is that they've actually started missile launches. They initiated launches that Air Force missileers had to deal with and shut down manually, and thank God that we always have that failsafe. The human is the failsafe device. You can't turn over the control of something like a nuclear weapon completely over to computers, and electronics are fallible. You know, people complain, you know, when computers break down, and I say, well, computers are nothing, not different than a light bulb, you know. Light bulbs blow out. You don't get mad about a light bulb blowing out.
Yeah.
You shouldn't get mad about a computer blowing out because it's just another electronic device.
Yeah, but, you know, a light bulb doesn't cost $1,700.
What's that?
I said, yeah, but a light bulb doesn't cost $1,700.
That's true. That's true. It doesn't do you any good to get mad about it because you still got to fix it whether you're in a cheerful mood.
That's true. Now, I understand you had an announcement you were going to make.
Yes, I have. I have an announcement, and I take great pleasure in telling our audience that Kevin Smith has been appointed Asia correspondent for UFO Digest, and his area of expertise and research and investigation is going to be UFO activity in Asia. And Kevin, you can tell us more about that project.
Well, at this point, I don't have a lot to tell other than, naturally we have some things on the drawing board, but as people who have been listening to the show have heard me do some reports recently about UFO activity in Asia, in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand. And, of course, you and I have talked about UFO activity in China. The reporting of UFO activities, incidents, etc., sightings, in Asia is quite different than the reporting here. And it's just sort of out there and matter of fact. And but we don't get to hear that very much in the West. And there's some amazing reports, very detailed reports, high-level reports available. I'm going to be working on getting those to us.
Proffer this information. There's a UFO researcher named Amiya in Japan, and he or she, I don't know whether male or female, but they sent information about a new book in Japanese written by military Japanese pilots of their UFO encounters, and very interesting take on it that the Japanese government and the Japanese military take on it. And it's basically they can say whatever they want as long as they don't reveal any military secrets. And it's kind of odd.
But very open about it.
Find the report, and maybe you can follow up on Japanese UFOs.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I got Amiya's review of the book.
Pardon me?
I got Amiya's review of the book. It was emailed to me.
Okay, that's what we were talking about. But, there's a lot of important things happening in China, and I've shared some of my views on the role of China in this whole affair, and the repeated incursions of UFOs into Chinese airspace. Western China is kind of a forbidden zone for both Westerners and for some Chinese, because there's an area in Western China between China and Tibet where UFO activity is rampant, and people do disappear. So the Chinese government doesn't think that's good for tourism, so they don't let people go into this area in far western China, eastern Tibet. And people believe it's because of this hotbed of UFO activity.
It may be. All right, I want to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join Robert Morningstar and me. And if you have a question or comment, we want to hear from you. What do you think about this press conference and the way it's been treated by the press? What do you think it signals, if it signals anything? We want to hear from you. Now, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Let me say it again, 623-444-5889. In the USA and Canada, there is a toll-free number, and that number is 888-223-4599. If you need to call me toll-free, you may do so. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for out there, but what I do have is flash messages. So you can go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the graphic about tonight's show, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. To the right of that is the link that says flash message, but you must be outside of the USA and outside of Canada in order for me to even get your flash message and see it. And we have one from Bob in Australia. He says, hi, Kevin and Robert. My question to Robert is, what are your thoughts on these massive spaceships coming into our solar system? Do you think this is the real deal, and do you think they are friend or foe?
And it's really, really interesting. About 10 months ago, I started to get photographs taken by people in different regions of the United States, and they were showing luminosities. They were taking pictures of the sky in daytime, and their digital cameras were picking up luminosities near the sun, near the limb of the sun. Sometimes the SOHO satellites picked them up, and NASA was saying that they were just artifacts or radiation. But I thought it's really curious that people in North Carolina would be sending me photos of the sky. And the first one you say, oh, maybe it's a lens flare.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get one from somebody else out west, and you go, well, you know, okay. And then somebody else in the central states. And they started adding up over months, and I'm saying, wait a second, you know, it really looks like something's out there. And it appears to me that something is approaching. And, you know, the Planet X legend may be more than legend, and I think we have to keep an eye on it. I had a very vivid remote viewing experience about a month ago.
Okay, let's take this telephone call, and then we'll get to the remote viewing experience, okay? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Okay, Brent.
I just want to make one comment about the skeptic bunkers.
All right.
It's been going on for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't attack the message, try to attack the messenger.
Uh-huh. Well, that's true. That's true. I think, when you start looking, though, for why, I'm reminded of Watergate, follow the money. And if we follow the money, I wonder if it leads back to the military-industrial complex, or does it lead back to the government?
My bet would be the military-industrial complex, IDC.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. Well, Brent, thanks for the call.
Yep. Goodbye.
Bye. Robert, what do you think? You think the financial ties would lead anywhere, or do you think these guys are doing this just because they feel called of the cosmos to do it?
Oh, I think they do it for money.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think they do it for money, and they are paid professionals, and it's just that, you know. They publish a magazine, it sells, they sell advertising, they get paid, they feel happy about what they do because they're smarter than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a Luciferic pride to have the ability to, it's almost like magic, you know, to befuddle people, to be your own little Wizard of Oz, you know, pulling smoke and mirror tricks and hiding behind the curtain. So,
and get to be the expert.
Mercenary goal behind it, too.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. My name. Hello?
Yes, we're waiting. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Peter, I'm calling from Canada. I just wanted to say hello to Robert, and I had a question. This whole thing, all the stuff that's unfolding right now with the whole UFO business, is it almost looks like some kind of historical endgame that's in process. And I'm just wondering if Robert could theorize some more about it.
I agree. It is a historical ending and a historical new beginning, a new page, you might say, in the age of flying saucers. There's a well-known writer named Paris Flammon who coined the phrase. He wrote a book called The Age of Flying Saucers, and citing the fact that this 1947 onward, from Kenneth Arnold and Roswell on through what is being revealed now, was a totally new epic in history, and he dubbed it The Age of Flying Saucers. And I see this as the second epic beginning, that the epic of suppression of the information and hiding of the facts is coming to an end, and that a new age is coming, and it all seems to be timed with this concept of a major transformation of mankind that will occur in 2011 and 2012. And I believe that this transformation is going to be primarily psychological, but psychological states do have physical effects on people and your body, so I'm really interested in watching this metamorphosis unfold. I'll tell you another thing. As editor of UFO Digest, I feel very privileged to have the trust of our readers and people who comment. And I want to just share something with you. A lot of people have been writing to me independently recently of their beliefs that they may be part extraterrestrial. And as science is rapidly unfolding, it may come to the fact that they may reveal that humanity does have an extraterrestrial origin. So more than one person is kind of getting this feeling and now getting over shyness about saying, you know, I feel different, I feel connected, and I may not be, you know, I may not be of this earth. So that's an interesting phenomenon. And then there's also these theories about the unwinding or the 12-strand DNA metamorphosis. So humanity is changing, and with 2012 as a psychological psychological landmark, something that we're looking forward to, I think that we are all being prepared to be changed mentally, physically, and spiritually. How that will unfold, I don't know. I suspect, one of my suspicions is that the powers that be, in trying to retain the status quo and their grip on power, may lead us into a great war. Perhaps something limited tactical war, for example, Israel and Iran, as a last ditch effort to keep us separated from the truth and reality. But that's right, precisely the message underlying Robert Hastings' work, is you better not go there.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Jeff. I'm calling from Montreal. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the call.
Uh-huh.
First of all, congratulations, Kevin, on your appointment to UFO Digest as the Asian correspondent. I think that's terrific.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I agree.
And good evening to you, Mr. Morningstar. Just a couple of comments, just perhaps get your feedback on this. I'm curious, Kevin and Mr. Morningstar, on my comment. First of all, did the UFO Disclosure Project or conference that took place in 2001 was quickly foreshadowed by the events of September 11th, 2001. So I think that it had legs, it had some momentum to get the press and the public engaged, and I think the effort was noble, and I think that's probably why it didn't go as far as it did, because the events of 9/11 just sort of foreshadowed that. However, they do tie in and to UFO disclosure, in my opinion, because I don't really think that this is a government that is in control of the military-industrial complex. I would say it would be the other way around, and add on to that military-industrial complex, offshore banks, and that sort of hierarchy, and the Illuminati comes into play or into mind as well.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you, and that's why I mentioned that Kevin's question elicited this elicited an insight from me, and that may be that what we call our government has finally decided that they are the legitimate power here, and that they've got to wrest back from the shadow group authority that was vested in them by Nixon when he signed off on UFOs not being the United States government's purview. So I think, as I said, we're in a revolution, a psychological and a philosophical one primarily, and I think that's what's happening. And I agree with you about the military-industrial complex now controlling the government. And that's exactly what President Eisenhower warned us of on his very last night in office. And I was a 12-year-old boy, and I saw that, and I was taken aback. It's like, what is he saying, you know? And as years have gone by, I have tremendous and greater admiration for Dwight David Eisenhower.
Well, I'd just like to make one comment, because add on to that comment, if I could, Kevin.
Sure, go ahead.
Where I depart from your agreement with my assessment is with regard to the government, quote-unquote, the legitimate government, the standing government that you and I recognize as the Obama administration or whatever administration, has never been, will never be, the government. That's window dressing, in my opinion. That's just my personal opinion, and this government that represents the people right now is window dressing for the people to give them that sense of that false sense, that false paradigm, that there is a question, there is a choice between left and right, that there's a difference between Democrats and Republicans. And the reason I say that is because you can't have disclosure in an environment where the top Google search today in the United States of America was resentment towards government. And that was the title, because Americans are now being watched very closely by the Department of Homeland Security by email. There was a conference today where the police are now looking at people's emails and phone conversations to determine if they have resentment towards the government, and especially veterans. And if they can monitor the American population for resentment and are afraid of veterans turning on them because they're dissatisfied or resentful about the care they get from the U.S. government, I can't see how we can have the UFO disclosure, Kevin, or Mr. Morningstar, in a police state environment. So I don't think this is going to go anywhere other than the fact that I think this was done the other day, because their ratings are going down the toilet, as Kevin says, and they know, as you did, you pressed their money button, Mr. Morningstar.
Right.
They know that this is a good, this is fall, this is, you got the event coming up on TV. Every fall, the ABC, CBS, NBC, since I was a kid, it would almost seem, and I'm 43, seem to have rolled out all of these UFO shows around this time period. This seems to be the prime picking time for getting all those people sucked into the television season. And Larry King, you know, he's on the way out. He did a number of UFO shows, and the ratings weren't that hot. He wasn't getting the television audience because people have woken up. The mainstream media is controlled and managed by the military-industrial complex. It always has been, will always be that way. Perhaps it's not that way at the local level, but people are pressured at that level because they don't want to look stupid, so they go ahead and toe the party line. I know that. I call local radio here all the time. They're brainwashed moron.
I wish we had more time to hear what you've got to say, Jeff, but we have to step away from break. I'm sorry. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Like an open mic. I am back, and Robert Morningstar is back, and we'd like to invite you to join us. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and toll-free 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send us a flash message by going to my website. Look just to the right of the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Well, Robert, I think it's pretty clear that, there's a whole lot of surveillance going on about, as our caller mentioned, Homeland Security and police departments and government agencies, and everybody is under surveillance, and they're looking looking at email and listening to this show and so forth. During the break, I stepped outside, and there's a helicopter hovering, or was hovering right above the studio. So there's a lot of this stuff going on, but it's one thing when people just resent the government, just in general. They don't like government. Well, okay, yeah. that's one thing. It's another thing when they resent certain things that the government does, and they want to change those things, which is supposedly what a democracy is about. Right. And, man, you don't have to do any surveillance on me. All you got to do is turn your radio on or your computer, and here I am. Knock on my door and ask me questions, and I will answer. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Tony from North Carolina.
Hello, Tony.
Yeah, I just wanted to say all people have to do is look that every week now that there is some astronomer saying that there's life on this planet and that planet. And to me, that is disclosure. They're trying to do it slowly, but the government is doing it, and they're behind it, and they're pushing it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they just want to do it their way so they would not look bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, except it's too late. They look bad. What do you think, Robert? I said that it's too late. They already look bad.
This is such a marked sea change, a radical change. I'd like to invite the audience to go to UFO Digest. And currently I have my report on the UFOs and Nukes press conference. It's called A New Morning for UFOs in America, because American Morning, CNN, covered it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'd like you to compare that with an article that I wrote called UFO Smokescreen. If you type in UFO Smokescreen into the search box on the website, you'll get my article, which is about Mike Wallace's interview of Major Donald Keough in 1958. And you can see, because we've linked the videotape of that interview, you can see the radical difference in the approach of a major network news station to UFOs. And I only wish that Major Donald Keough could have seen Robert Hastings at the NPC conference on Monday. He was, I think Robert Hastings was the perfect spokesperson, spokesman for ufology. He was eloquent, he was dignified, he was diplomatic, he was tactful, he was succinct, and...
Well, let me ask our caller, Tony...
person there that day.
Tony, did you get to see any of that press conference?
No, Kevin, I didn't. I really didn't. But I plan on watching it if I can find it on the internet.
Oh, yeah, it's there. It's on YouTube. Not a problem. And plus, we'll have a link to it in the K-Files this week. So, Tony, thanks for the call.
Okay, well, thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Mr. Morningstar.
I think we were talking about all of this surveillance and looking for people that have resentment toward the government. I can't think of a better way to engender resentment than to violate people's privacy and violate their freedom and violate the Constitution. Boy, I'll tell you, that will engender the resentment they're looking for. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Robert. It's Stefan in Quebec City.
Hello, Stefan.
Hi. Robert, I was wondering, I have no doubt that the media opened up its gates in regards to the UFO press conference of its own accord, but I was wondering if you think there's a possibility that... that might have been directed to do so because maybe one day they're planning, not they, but the powers that be might be planning to drum up some public support for the weaponization of space against these people.
Well, I'll tell you what has happened, Stefan. I guess our discussion has engendered some strife amongst those who are watching and surveilling what we're talking about. They've cut Morningstar off the line here. So you want to hang on? We'll see if we can get him back.
All right.
Yeah. Just hang on.
It just seems odd to me that, you know, since the purse strings are still being held by the government, but that the media would automatically open up its gates like that.
Yeah. His telephone line is jammed up.
Oh, boy.
And now, we've had this happen before. And I went through a period of thinking, well, there must be something wrong with our phones. And I know there are people that think that's the case, but it's not the case. I did have something wrong with the phone yesterday, but that got fixed. But when this happens and we try to call the guest back, we get the signal that the exchange is busy. So we don't, it's not their line that gives us a busy signal. It sounds the same, except it's a much faster busy signal. That means the exchange is busy. So let's give it another try.
I'll get off the air here soon, but in the meanwhile, what do you think is your opinion about that, in that issue?
We're going to get him back.
Oh, okay.
Well, I guess somebody didn't like what we were saying, Robert.
Yeah, I was just going to say, somebody didn't like what I said about Robert Hastings.
Can you hear me okay, Robert?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. We have Stefan from Canada on the line, and Stefan, if you will, repeat your question for Robert.
Oh, yeah, sure. I was just wondering if you think that part of the reason why the media might be opening up is they might be directed to do so in view of a future possible public drumming up of support for the weaponization of space against these visitors?
Well, yes, as I said before, the information that we've had for 2 years after the Stevensville UFO incident, you know, that was very important because the media ignored the fact that Stevensville was just 70 miles from the Bush Ranch. And the UFOs, when they took off, they headed off in that direction. So they were showing the world, look, hey, you know, we're going to go pay a visit to the President of the United States at 3,000 miles an hour. Everybody conveniently ignored that except a researcher in Canada named Don Ledger. He and I both were aware of it, and he published really excellent articles about that. I think that's the message. That was equivalent to the 1952 flyby over the White House in July of 1952. So it is happening, and it's being directed by forces greater than our governments. I think they've been instructed to own up, and it's a very slow process, you know, to put the brakes on a machinery of disinformation that's been operating for 60 years plus. There's momentum to it, and they can't just stop it in one day. So it's a process of course of several years before they can really arrest the disinformation and start to disseminate the truth about it.
Yeah, Stefan, you had another question. Go ahead.
Sure, sorry. There's some bit of a lag here, but I was just wondering, in the chance that we do engage extraterrestrials in a war, what do you think is the chance of human race winning?
I don't think we would be wise to engage extraterrestrials in a war. Simply by the fact that their air power is so much more powerful than ours, and the only weapon that we really have to counter them is nuclear weapons, and they've shown us how much control we have over those, that they keep in monitoring and check them and change them when they want to. So I don't think going to war with extraterrestrials is in the best interest of the human race. Of course, if we're attacked, it's a great different story. Excuse me?
Yeah. Thank you very much, and continue the great work, Robert. I enjoy it. And
thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stefan. 623-444-5889 is the telephone number to call. We have Will from London, and he says, thank you for another great show. Things seem to be heating up with the increasing regularity of UFO reports and unfolding official scientific releases of discoveries leading to signs of ET life. How would you gentlemen like to see the world deal with the presence of ETs in the next few years, and what do you want to happen? So, okay,
what
Robert.
What do I want to happen?
Yeah, how would you like to see the world deal with ET presence over the next few years?
I would like to see the world deal with it with reason and curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things together, reason, curiosity, and fearlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it could read down to the mutual advancement of both cultures, you know, an extraterrestrial culture, and something new, of course, will come of it. That's the way I'd like to see it unfold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Peacefully, reasonably, with a lot of curiosity and excitement about what we're going to learn. And I think we have a couple of things to teach ETs too, you know.
Well, okay. What do you think we have to teach ETs?
Feelings. Things about relationships, individuality. The reason I say this is that one of the most interesting aspects of contact with extraterrestrials that I've encountered is, of course, the human is changed by the extraterrestrial contact, the mind scan, you know, with an abductee. But in reports of people who have worked with extraterrestrials in joint ventures, as we would say, the military-industrial complex or Area 51 or Dulce, the contact of the extraterrestrial with the human being seems to change them too. And one of the interesting stories about the Dulce complex was that Thomas Costello was working with an extraterrestrial, and over time they became friends. And when danger approached, the extraterrestrial, feeling friendship toward Costello, warned him with enough time to save his life when one of the famous firefights that occurred at Dulce occurred.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back, we're going to be on final approach. We'll have time for one, maybe two telephone calls. So be ready. When we come out of break, I'll start accepting calls again. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on final approach this evening. My guest is Robert Morningstar, and let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi. Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say a couple of things, and I'll ask for a comment. Different sources, like Dan Bierish, Miriam Delicato, George Cavasalis. George, in particular, talked about the Montauk Project. I don't know if you know much about that.
Yeah, we're familiar with it. Go ahead.
They kept running into kind of a wall where there wasn't any more information coming in.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like the end of the timeline that we're on. And the other people talked about that And what it looks like is there's going to be a transformation taking place, and the powers that be, because of Montauk, already know about this. And so I guess what I'm wondering about, when we get more and more media disclosure, it's an attempt by the powers that be to try and control what's coming down the pike. And I feel it's like some kind of red flag operation as a last ditch attempt for control. Mm-hmm. And then after that, who knows what's going to happen. Anyway, that's how I'm viewing.
May I ask you what you think was happening at Montauk? Just to turn the tables on you, if I may.
Two aspects. One was mind control. The other was going into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very basic.
Yeah. The mind control aspect interests me more than going into the future, because of the effects that it had on the local population. I know several people who lived out there, and I myself had an experience in 1978 that I couldn't explain to myself very easily. But after years and years of research and then becoming aware of the Montauk Project, that would explain some of the things going on. Like, for example, application of alien mind control methods and testing them on people. That's one of the things that I think was going on out there. Experimentation in breeding, genetic engineering, I think that was going on out there. It's also very close to Plum Island, which is a very secret, or was a secret, bio-warfare research island in the middle of Long Island Sound. I think all of those things were connected.
Well, I think the going into the future aspect, and I think they know what's coming down the pike. And I think they're still going to try and control it. And I'm thinking that it'll be a red flag operation as ETs make themselves known and make themselves present, because there's going to be Earth changes that are dramatic. So,
yeah,
so
this is what I expect in regard to what Kevin was pointing out about these objects, celestial objects coming into the inner solar system, and what they may be, whether they are Planet X, Nibiru, planetoid, asteroid, whatever. But I believe that, there has been an increasing series of meteor and asteroid events in the last couple of years, and accelerating. They come in droves, and I feel that we're kind of looking at perhaps like a railroad train configuration of a planetoid or an asteroid with a debris trail, and that possibly could be something that would precipitate some radical changes on Earth. But, the chances of an asteroid hitting the Earth are... quite appropriately, the word is astronomical. And I don't really worry. I don't really worry about that. I don't believe in this doomsday scenario. Earthquakes have always happened, tsunamis have always happened, volcanoes have always happened, and, mankind keeps going on. I have great faith in the adaptability of humankind.
All right, John, thanks so much for the call. And, I think, Robert, you've hit upon something that people do need to think about, and that is that we have evidence of tremendous cataclysmic events in the past. We have evidence of it, yet here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And, that doesn't, in no way does that mean that it was not cataclysmic. And a lot of people and animals and plants died in those cataclysms, but here we are, We survived, and so I don't think that, you know, I don't buy the idea that this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I want to reiterate my invitation to you to be at my December the 21st, 2012 party, the Kevin Smith Show party.
Hold it in New York. I'll be sure to be there. Yeah, that would be great. There was something I was going to say about this. There's a thing called cataclysmic evolution. It was a concept that Emmanuel Velikovsky composed, and that these things come along periodically, but they actually spur mankind to more rapid development and advancements. And it is my hope that whatever happens, you know, we'll still be here 2013, 2014, and so on.
Well, December the 22nd, 2012, I'm going Christmas shopping.
We all have to come to grips and to come to peace with the one reality about life is that we're all going to die.
Yeah.
That's, you know, once you come to accept that, you really don't worry about it. You just live your life. And I think that what I was going to say is people are afraid of losing the present in some great cataclysm. Wow, you know, a tsunami's going to hit or a volcano's going to blow up and Yellowstone's going to go up and we might get thrown back, you know, 50, 60 years, you know. We'd be living like in the 40s and the 30s. Well, folks, I was born in the 40s and they weren't so bad, you know. Things were just slower, calmer. We didn't have internet. Not everybody had a phone, but, you know, we had a life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will always adapt. And so one step back, two steps forward, we still make progress.
That's right. Well, Robert, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. As always, it's fascinating when you're on the show. Controversial, fascinating, and I hope you'll be back with us again.
I'm very honored to have you as the Asia correspondent, Kevin. I think we're going to produce some very good material, and we are expanding our scope. You know?
Well,
so thank you very much.
I am glad to be a part of it. If you will, just stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's going to be a wrap for this evening. And I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you haven't checked out this press conference, if you've been too busy, you know, keeping track of Lindsay Lohan's legal problems and Britney Spears' career problems, and, you know, you've been too busy with the big stuff. Well, back up and check out this press conference. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.